Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Peas, just letting you know, at the beginning of the episode, our gorgeous guest, Trish, she was outside, and in true pea form, the whippersnippers from the council came to start working. And she lived on this beautiful property.
Yeah, it's just like all nature
idyllic.
Around her.
And then, and of course, the man from the council came with his whippersnipper. So there's a bit of...
It gives like a horrible hum. And if that's triggering for you or you can't listen to it or you're thinking, is that me? Is it my my AirPods?
Just skip through a bit and we move her to the bedroom.
Otherwise, she says some great stuff. Just listen to it and know that it's going to end in a couple of minutes.
Snuggles into her bed.
And it's all quiet then. And also the dog barks a little bit. Yeah. So anyway.
Okay, all of that.
Enjoy.
We would like to acknowledge that this podcast meeting is being held on Aboriginal land, the land of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation. And we would like to pay respect to their eldest past, present and emerging, and their multiple birth parents with children with disabilities.
And this week we have Trish, a retrieval nurse from South Australia and a beautiful pea mum of three.
This podcast contains truth, laughter and the occasional F word, so it's not really suitable for children.
Sometimes you just have to get your shits out. Shit, 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 shit. That's right. This is a language warning. Oh, shit.
Hello, Mandy.
Hello, Kate.
Guess what?
What?
Autumn has gone and winter has come.
Yes, Melbourne.
I'm sorry if you can hear the dog. That's just life.
But I've got new jeans.
Yeah, I said, yes. Mandy's got new jeans.
Yeah.
So you're ready for the season?
I'm ready. I've got a change of shape. So that's about, you know, when I got my colours done, she said, buy one new shape a season. If you don't have much money, just do that.
So you meant the jeans shape are changed.
Yes.
I thought you meant you'd change shape.
Oh, so I haven't changed shape. I mean, I'm better, but...
What does she mean by she's had a change of shape?
As in a shape in style.
I know, I've heard them all talking about wide leg jeans. That's all we sell at work.
Yeah. So anyway,
you've got them and they're very cute.
Thank you.
And I miss our beautiful autumn. We got about 5 days of summer and about 5 days of autumn, but that's okay.
Yeah. Anyway, we have got gorgeous Trish here. Would you like to say hello?
Hi, Mandy. Hi, Kate.
Hi. Oh. So great to see you. Trish has a beautiful backdrop of like Australian gum trees.
Oh, you should see it.
It looks like there's a little cubby house. It looks quite idyllic.
Gorgeous. We're going to find out all about you. So let's start our questions.
So our first question, do you have a band or music that lifts you up when you're feeling sad or really gets you pumped when you're feeling happy?
Yeah, I really struggled with this one.
I think it's our trickiest question.
I'm not about. I have to say that you put me on to Hamilton, and it put me through the sort of the really, really tricky times. And so I know I can't list every song on the album, but I did find – I did find that there was a compilation done with Lin-Manuel Miranda and Ben Platt called Found Tonight. I don't know if you've heard it, but it's a mashup of a song from Hamilton and a song from, I think it's from a store, Dear Evan Hansen.
That music.
I haven't seen that.
Oh, I have. Yes.
Yeah. And just listening to it, it feels like it's a bit of a P anthem to me because it's sort of telling our story. It just identifies that sort of sense of loneliness and when you're feeling really isolated and almost like nobody can see you. Mm. You're in your own bubble and it's really, really tricky, but then it's a very uplifting song and the Evan Hansen side of it is, you know, don't worry, you know, reach out, we're there for you. And it just really feels like that peak community. It's, you know, you're going to be okay, you're seen, you know, raise a glass to all of us.
That sounds awesome.
That sounds great. That will be on Spotify.
Yeah, and then I will listen to it. I don't even have to find it.
That one really speaks to me. And I love a good harmony. I can't sing at all. And my daughter, bless her, she's very tolerant.
Well, that's nice. Mine aren't.
Well, mine are not. They're like, do you know you only sing in harmonies? So, yeah.
Some people would give anything for that.
I can't help it.
I don't. It's just, but you can sing. I can't.
Yeah, Mandy can sing.
Not really.
And then I thought another couple of songs that are meaningful to me. There's a Birds of Tokyo song called My Darling, My Song, My Son. And it's a love letter from a parent to a child or to a. And it just says, you know, I will believe in the man you'll be. Oh. I will always be here. There's a long way to go, but you'll always be loved. It's just, I think for me, and I'll talk a little bit more about it later, but in my story is a little bit different in the sense that we didn't know we were part of a P experience until all three of our kids were born and diagnoses were, you know, were down the track. And it's taken a lot for me to get my head around the whole concept of being what I thought we were to understand what we really are and then still seeing the strength in that and the journey, because sometimes it's so easy to get bogged down in all of that trickiness.
Yes, it is.
And I find that song really, really uplifting. It's just about a parent saying to their child, the hard days are going to come, but I'm here for you and I believe in you. Aww. And I think I sometimes need to hear that for myself because –
yeah, always for yourself. Yeah.
It's encouraging and it's that real beautiful, beautiful love and saying, I see you. So that one's meaningful to me and particularly to my big boy, but to my boys. And the third one is a song by Missy Higgins, because I can never just pick one, called Be the Difference. And my girl is sort of, I feel like she's my, in a way, a bit of a mini me. And I just see such strength in her. And, you know, the words, I remember my mother's voice reminding me that every day is a choice where there's good, there's bad. My child, you can always be the difference. And I feel like for us, our story is around neurodivergence. And I think we're lucky to be in a time that we are because so much more understanding is coming around, and so we're not hiding away from the fact that we're a bit different in our family.
Yes,
I see the term I hear kind of thrown around a bit, and I feel like that's true. But it's a story that I want to share really positively because it is something that, yes, it sets us aside a little bit, you know, in some of our environments, but it's amazing at the same time. So I just want to say, this is the time to, you know, be who you are and don't hide from it. Oh, be the difference.
Yeah.
I am who I am. And
that's right. Yeah,
and I love it.
And you're different and you're different and that's all good.
So tell us about, did you win any awards at school?
Oh, this was a tricky one because I actually have a really terrible memory and it's just like I remember my younger years just sort of more in imagery rather than like a set scene where you go from start of the day to the finish. But I do remember I played a lot of netball and I do remember winning like best and fairest a few times. I enjoyed sport.
Yeah.
As far as academically, no, I wasn't really sort of kicking any massive goals, but that sort of made a bit of sense in retrospect. I joke with my husband. I said, you know, eventually when I peg it, just put on my tombstone, I'm great on the concept, fuzzy on the details.
I hear you. That is an excellent.
We need my new partner, which this is an advantage of meeting someone later in life. Not that everyone should break up and go through the hell of that, but she'll be like, your strengths are really this, this and this. Mine are this and this. And we sort of know our strengths. Mm. So she's like, oh, I'll do that. Mm. I'm like, oh, okay, do it.
Yeah.
Because I am fuzzy on details.
Yeah.
some things that are really important, I've been very details oriented about.
No, I'm not.
But otherwise, exactly. Like, But
Tupperware
so movie titles and song titles and kids will say, Mum, you know, what's your favourite song? And off the cuff, I'm like, yeah, please don't ask me. I can't choose.
No, me
I can't
too.
Remember the names of them. I'll just tell you who the artist is.
We've got enough things in our head, actually.
If you're happy, you know, exactly clap your hands.
My band is kickball.
Anyway.
That is a good song,
Kate.
That's
a good song. Happy and, you know, clap your hands. And then if you're not, you don't clap. And everyone's like, oh, maybe I need to support her today. Anyway.
Yes.
Okay. So my favourite, our favourite question is, why are you a P or part of our P community?
Well, I'm a triple P, I discovered, down the track. So it started with my eldest and he, we went through primary school and we went to a gorgeous little primary school where he was in the same class with the same kids every year. And that, you know, suited him really, really well. But once we transitioned to high school, that's when things started to really show that that there were some challenges there, and we started that journey of diagnosis. So my eldest is ADHD, autistic with a PDA profile, which for those listeners who aren't aware is pathological demand avoidance. And then that was all happening just as we were starting to go into COVID. And so then during COVID when we were doing homeschooling, my gorgeous middle P, I watched her trying to learn, and to be honest, poking a fork in your eye would have been more fun.
It was a really big learning experience for a lot of us.
Anything, just the distraction. And it's not that she wasn't willing, but it was just so hard.
Yeah.
And I just thought, no, there is more to the story than that. She's a happy, bubbly, you know, energetic kid. And so we went down that path of diagnosis, and she's autistic ADHD. And then with our little one, he was younger at that stage. So over a period of the last sort of 2 to 3 years, he then got his diagnosis, and he's also autistic ADHD. So learning lots and lots about it over time made me start to realise too that, oh, actually I, you know, struggled with memory retention and just, you know, bits and pieces, and starting to understand what anxiety actually looks like and the typical picture of anxiety and how that actually looks like on a day-to-day basis can actually surprise you and realise that I probably had been functioning as quite an anxious person my entire life.
Right.
And I recognised it as that because I was quite functional.
Yeah.
But I was very tired, tired. And so then eventually I got my ADHD diagnosis, which was the best thing ever because it really helped me understand a bit more about how I work. And I had lots of very effective scaffolds that I had put in place. But once things got a little bit tricky at home with trying to work through some of these challenges, it really just ended up exceeding my capabilities. And so, yeah, I'm super grateful. Oh, thank goodness for medication. Like, absolute game changer for me and improving quality of life. And it's not for everybody. And I had lots of good strategies in place, which made me quite effective. But I was so tired, just so tired that all that functioning stuff, so draining. So for me, getting that diagnosis was the best thing. And now, and the third part is that I work in retrieval. I'm a neonatal and pediatric retrieval nurse. I've done pediatric critical care for about 20 something years. With a background, I worked in ICU for 11 years in pediatric ICU and started my retrievals in that environment, and then they transitioned to a statewide service where it was all done out of the one hub. So we're quite a unique service in Australia, and even
I hadn't heard of it.
No.
Yeah, so there's very few services that actually retrieve the entire gamut of our
population. So what are you retrieving? Tell everybody.
So I am a neonatal and pediatric nurse, and we retrieve babies from 23 weeks gestation, which is roughly sort of the earlier stage, so around the 500 grams, up to children around 16 years of age. And so any centre that has a child or a baby that exceeds their care capability, they call in, they might just ask for advice. If they're not sure, they just need a bit of guidance, or it's quite clear that this patient can't stay with them. And that goes to a central number, and then they are able to talk to a doctor who can provide advice on the phone, but also can activate a retrieval team, and that's where we come in. So we're essentially like, we're part of the ambulance service, so we're on a base, and we just get tasked as we are needed. But South Australia is a really big geographical place.
It's
so population-wise, we're nothing like Melbourne and Sydney. And so it gets tricky because there's only a few of us, and so they have to try and triage. And our jobs can last anything from the shortest job might be 2.5 hours from leaving base, doing the job and getting back to base, to I've done 22 hours.
So how do you juggle that with your life?
So it's everything. It takes a bit of a village to support my career. I'm incredibly grateful for that.
So great, really, you're still doing it.
Yes.
I'm so appreciative to the support that my husband has. He, when we met, he just knew that it was something I really enjoyed and I was passionate about. And I was working in ICU at that stage and transitioned to just doing purely retrievals while we were married. But I only work half time because life is very full. So I at times I would do a little bit of extra agency work, but not these days. I find I'm spread too thin. But I always know that the end of my shift is never guaranteed to be the end of my shift. So it just takes planning. So my husband very conveniently works from home, and so he'll be able to take kids to school. Pick up. My mum's amazing. She's my rock, and so she will help out when we can, but I try not to call on her more than when we absolutely have to. And we just managed to make it work. We've had a few people in our lives at different stages who've been able to step in and do a little bit with helping picking up and looking after kids, and so far we've managed to do it okay.
It's great, and I just think if you love something and you're passionate and you're good and it is the perfect job for you, it's so great if you can stay doing it and try and, you know, because it's hard. I think you're amazing because it's hard to do it, but it's also hard to stop.
Yeah.
It really is, actually. I've wrestled with it over many, many times over the last few years. It's really sort of trying to grapple with where I need to put most of my energy into and it made sense that stepping away from my work was the logical solution, but I just couldn't. I couldn't make the decision because I knew if I stepped away, I wouldn't go back. It's really tricky space to work in. And giving away my position, the likelihood of stepping back into it was really low.
I can imagine.
And I discovered these sort of funny things about ADHD. Hyperfocus is really helpful. It's helpful in stressful situations because I'm able to actually zone in and focus really well, and it started to make sense why I wanted to be in critical care. And all of the executive functioning, trying to manage 7 or 8 patients out on the ward with, you know, planted with other people, was really hard. I don't want to go back to work anymore.
It's any of the other amazing concentrate on one patient.
But it's not for me. So, so for me, I realised that it was this or nothing, and it really I needed to be able to have a space I could step away from to be me. I had to have an identity. And
That matters.
It really did. And to just not be constantly needed and serving others 24/7, which I love, it got very, very, very consuming. I just need those breaks, and I only work between sort of 1 to 2 days a week. The way that we do 12-hour shifts. So I'm at home a lot of the time.
Yes, you are.
It's actually great for family life.
Brilliant. How do you tell us about what you love about, what are you drawn to in working with neonates, with our precious little prem babies?
I feel it's a real privilege. I think remembering when I had my babies and just the most overwhelming sense of love and protection that I had for them, and, you know, just, you know, the idea of not having them there with me was something that I struggled a little bit with. And in fact, when we had our first, I think because I'd worked in an ICU for so long, my concept of normal was a bit warped.
Very
skewed. I kept having to remind myself that, you know, most people sort of have a sort of a more standard baby phase. Yeah. You know, it's not norm for people to end up needing hospital support, and certainly not intensive care support. So I kept having to try and say to myself, this is, you know, this is okay. And so I think when I step into that environment, I remember how just all those hormones and just that sense of responsibility was. And so when families need our help, I just want to be that person that I can step in and say, look, I know this is actually not okay. And I think this is something that I really appreciate that I got from the P community, listening to your stories. I really think about, what do I say when I meet someone for the first time, when I'm walking into their room? And I generally, you know, once I've introduced myself, I'll always come in with a smile and say, congratulations.
Oh, yeah, the best.
It's wonderful.
Yeah.
And I'm really sorry that we have to be here and be part of your story.
Yeah.
But I know this is a big deal for you, and I'm here for you, and we're going to do this together.
Oh,
and
that makes me want to cry.
They will never forget you. That. Never.
Oh, Trish, beautiful.
Amazing.
Well, and we're there to, you know, hold their hand, and I can't make promises. That I can make everything okay.
No.
Because it's not okay.
No,
but,
it's not okay.
You know, I say to them, look, I will treat your baby like they're my own, and going to look after them. And if the family can't come with us, which we try very, very hard to bring a parent, you know, mum, but if they can't, then, you know, if they're unable to come with us, and you see that real challenge for partners. Who do I be with? Do I be with you? Or do I be with the baby? And so, you know, we sort of validate that any decision is fine.
Yeah.
But if you're not with them, then I'll try and, when we get to the other end, I'll get their number, take a photo of where they are, and I will send them a message and say, confirm your number, because we don't want anyone, you know, we won't be sending details to a random number.
Yes,
so once they've confirmed them, we'll say, you know, we're here.
Oh.
This is where the baby is, you know. This is what we're up to. So it's just keeping them in the loop so that they feel like they're connected, because it's their baby.
Yes, I followed that ambulance in my car. So I can't imagine being somewhere where you can't do that. Important.
So I just feel that that's a gift that you've given to me that I can now pass on to others to say, you know, yeah, we're here for you. And I think that's why I really enjoy it. And I just enjoy, I don't know, knowing that I can step into a space and just participate in something and help them on their journey.
It's a very unique job.
It is a very unique job.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it's really interesting.
Yeah, it's really interesting.
On any given day. And
different locations.
You know, we get paid to step into a helicopter and, you know, go flying on a beautiful day out to the Barossa or across to Kangaroo Island at sunset, you know.
Wow.
Stunning.
Yeah.
Or a plane. We fly by Royal Flying Doctors, by helicopter, by road, by jet. So it just depends how far we've got to go.
That's interesting.
Yeah, it is really, it's really interesting.
Yeah.
So let's go back to your beautiful children.
Yeah.
You said the diagnosis sort of unfolded high school. Did you have any inklings before that, or were you just like, I mean, because also we all know that our children are so amazing and special and beautiful that we just think, look how cool my kid is, you know.
Yeah, look, I think I did describe him as a little bit of a square peg in a round hole from early on, but as I started to learn a little bit more about PDA, I discovered a few sort of key things that kind of made me feel slightly better that I didn't pick it up earlier, because I think one of the biggest battles I had when I was a new mum was feeling that pressure of, it's my job to go in and assess a situation and understand the level of challenges in that environment and then know what to do about it. And so if I miss something for my own kids, that was something that I was quite worried about. But, you know, as time goes on, you sort of, it's your first child, and I was a critical care nurse, not a sort of a day-to-day on the ward pediatric nurse. And so actually my area is very special. So just little things like didn't like wearing buttoned up shirts. He would tolerate wearing a school uniform, but any other time he was like, oh, it's not happening. I used to joke when he was about three, you know, he would, from when he could start talking, which was a little bit late, he was just constantly negotiating. I joked he'd work for the UN, the diplomat, because everything was a negotiation. And funny things like, you know, not wanting to go on excursions. Oh, I don't really want to go to the zoo. I might get hay fever, or my legs might get tired. And I couldn't understand, what kid doesn't want to get out of a day at school and go on an excursion? That's fun. That's what anxiety was, and I didn't know. And so, you know, there would be challenges that we had along the way that didn't make sense to me, because we were really wanting to be the best parents we could, and we tried. And we tried to talk about, you know, ways in which to manage things. And yeah, it felt like it was a bit of a battle, and sometimes the messages just couldn't seem to get through. But we'd started to suspect there was a little bit of an issue and did a few assessments right at the end. Well, started organising them at the end of primary school and then had done at the beginning of high school, and that's where we started to pick up a few things. But unfortunately, that transition from a predictable environment to a high school where you're catching at a certain time, you're in an environment where there's lots of different classrooms and teachers and expectation, and you pretty quickly started to unfold. We ended up, after about a year and a little bit, transitioning to a different school, just feeling like maybe a different environment might help him create a bit of a new narrative where he's away from people who, you know, had been around him from primary school. When they had new friendships and were moving away, and thought, let him create his own new story and new friendships. But fortunately, at that stage, he was really heading into burnout. And we were really lucky to find a school that saw him and what he needed. And they, I couldn't be happier with how they treated us and him. And they were the ones who actually sort of put us onto the PDA diagnosis. About it, they just said, oh, well, we've had another child who's really struggling with school refusal, and this was part of their story. And as soon as I started listening and reading, I went, oh, that makes sense.
I feel like PDA is massive, and lots of people talk about it, or they don't want to talk about it.
I think it's only just newly getting recognized as a thing, and some countries of the world recognize it, some don't. And so for a long time it was sort of talked about like in hushed terms, because are you making this up?
Yeah.
You know, which obviously 100% no. And if you've lived around it, you know that it's real. And it's, you know. But, yeah, I think we haven't done a lot on it, because when the peas started, it wasn't recognised.
Yeah,
so it definitely wasn't. So it's very tricky to – you can't get an expert on.
Yeah.
Because they can't say it, even though they know, they can't say it. So, yeah, it's really only very recently that it's become more.
So it is recognised as a subprofile of of autism. And there are some really fantastic support groups and Facebook groups, and that's what I started to tap into. But I remember the first time I sat and started reading some of the information from the PDA groups, and it was really hard. Really hard. And you know, our experience, everybody's experience is unique, obviously, and for our son, sort of, I started to understand, you know, depending on their personality, if they're a little bit introverted versus extroverted, you know, the way in which that PDA and anxiety is expressed is quite different. So for my son, he wasn't, when he was really anxious, he would negotiate a lot. He needed that sense,
and
explained to me as, it's a pervasive need for autonomy, and when you feel like you have a sense of control of your environment, then that triggers not just an uncomfortableness or I don't like this, it's actually panic to the point that it feels like your life is in danger, and it's really hard to understand that. It makes no sense to think, oh, I'm just going to, you know, ask you to go catch the train back to school after your appointment. You were doing it before. It should be fine. Actually, you know, no, it's really not. And so, you know, it took us a little while to start to understand. And the old saying, once you know better, you do better.
Yeah, it's true.
Realize what's happening. And so for us, his defiance or his willingness to be able to do things, you know, that you ask, it just, his capacity became less and less until he burnt out. Mm. And what that looked like for us, you know, I went from someone who was kind of rumbling along, had a bit of an idea, to all of a sudden having a child who was refusing to sleep because sleep was demand. And so he'd be awake at 4 or 5 in the morning because the feeling he had when he woke up after one sort of short sleep cycle was really physically uncomfortable, very sensory, and so he wanted to avoid it. And so he couldn't function on no sleep, so he couldn't. And so all of a sudden we couldn't leave the house anymore. You'd book an appointment and he couldn't go. Mm. And our life just turned upside down. Mm. His panic exponentially, you know, just exploded. And so it changed everything. Mm. It changed the way that we made decisions. It changed, we couldn't go on holidays anymore. We couldn't, you know, I'd have plans. And he became very dependent on me. And so that was the stage where, you know, things got really hard, and it was really hard. I found it was that time, and I think a lot of mums will relate, where you're in the trenches and just day to day you're just constantly hypervigilant, on the front foot all the time, trying to go, how do I make today work? How do I meet all the things that need to happen? You know, I got to the stage where I could leave the house to drop the other kids at school, and I needed to be back within half an hour. He'd ring me, "Mum, where are you? I'm panicking. I need you." And my husband was working from home. He changed his arrangement so that he could work from home. But I was the one he needed. But I didn't have any skills. Yeah. I didn't know how to deal with this.
So how did you learn?
Yeah.
Well, I think a little bit of the ADHD in me helped, because that hyper-focus of, I have to fix this. I can't. I've lost that child that I had, and I don't know where he's gone. And so I just went about trying to read and learn and listen to different people and try and make sense of what that looked like in the context of our situation. I tapped into the experience of, you know, other professionals, and we started trialing different medications. That's a really tricky road.
It really is. Some of
them, you know, medications, they're one percenters, and maybe a bit more than that, but it's tricky. Some people respond very well. You know, in our situation, we'd start something and at a low dose, and we'd grade up, and you'd start to see a bit of an effect, and you're like, okay, we're okay. And then we'd go up a dose, and then we'd get all the side effects, and it would become no longer beneficial, and then it would make meltdowns worse. Oh. And then you're like, is this just a transition phase? He just needs to get used to it.
And it's really hard when it's not happening to your body.
Yes.
You know, and I remember thinking, I am inflicting this on another human who isn't able to, at their age, articulate everything. But I know that this needs to happen for them, and for them to function safely and to be safe. But, and also half the time, and my boys are amazing, they didn't want to talk to me about it. They're like, oh, we just want to play.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, but how do you feel today?
Yeah.
So it's really different. Hard.
You know, you don't want to put words in their mouth.
No.
And you want to let them articulate it, but at the same time, yeah, absolutely. But it was really, look, I won't sugarcoat it, it was horrendous.
Yeah,
it was
hard.
Just a stage where you're right, Kate, you're just seeing them suffer and wondering, am I contributing, or am I actually going to make it better? But surely it has to get better than this. And then throw in the mix of, you know, coming into teenagehood and all
with
that.
Hard and enough. I think hormones, I think a lot of kids who are medicated early have a change around that time anyway. And I know our beautiful friends whose kids have type 1 diabetes, really tricky time. It's just everything's compounding. Yeah. And then also they are going through all the emotions of puberty.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah, so it was just, I would sort of, I was lucky to get onto a couple of resources that resonated with me. Like I heard different people and I just thought, oh, that doesn't quite feel right situation, but this makes a lot of sense. And there was one particular book series, and there was a Facebook group too called the Autism Discussion Page, I think that was what it was called. And there was a book about shutdowns and meltdowns, and it helped me really understand more from the perspective of what they were experiencing. And so I think then at that point I just went, I just have to listen to him and learn, you know, learn to sit in the discomfort and know that I can't fix this, but I just need to be there. And for a long and validate it. And even though it just felt like it was really silly to validate things that just were so over the top, like, you know, felt so dramatic and deep, when, you know, you just wanted to go, no, it doesn't need to be that big. It needs to be, but for him, that's what it felt like. And so I just had to let it be for a long time and then just build up skills slowly and then go through that NDIS process and, you know, to start off with and then connect in with some people who understood a bit about PDA. And I have to say, for our journey, I feel incredibly blessed. I feel like people who listen to us, I never had to really fight to be acknowledged that this is the situation that we're in. Great. And so that's a huge difference. Yes. It didn't make it easy. It just meant that I was able to really try and advocate for him. And
everyone was backing you up.
And seeing.
Yeah. And so now we have a team. We've got, you know, psychologists, psychiatrists, OTs, speeches, you know, all of these people who are part of our team championing us. And we've been able to get through those really, really hard times. And, you know, they are really tricky. It's a very kind of personal story to tell. I mean, there were days where I'd come home from doing a 12-hour shift, I'd still be in my uniform, I'd walk into his room and he would just be so distraught and we'd be on the phone to Lifeline for 2 hours and I hadn't eaten yet, you know. And then you'd go, okay, can I go to work tomorrow? I don't know if I can.
That is pee life.
Take it day to day. But we got through it, and real credit to my boss, who at that time was incredibly supportive and just said, let us know what you need. If you need to take a break, break. And there'd be times where I'd ring up, you know, 2 hours before night duty and say, I'm so sorry, this is not okay, but I actually I don't feel I can leave. And there was never any pushback.
That's wonderful.
I'm forever grateful. And then, over time, and I just tread water. I did my minimum, and I really didn't like that, but my brain just simply couldn't do more.
It definitely is, and I think we all need permission to do that when everything is swarming around us.
If you're treading water at the moment, just listen.
All of us have done it, definitely.
And eventually you're like, I think I'm dog paddling. You know, like it's very gradual and it's
it doesn't mean you're not still doing a lot.
Oh, you're doing
a lot. There's times where you're doing so much.
Surviving.
That's right. Well, that actually coming off that high alert to not as much still feels scary.
It does. But also too, I mean, I think, you know, in my work there's no room for complacency.
No, of course.
You have to be very present. And the thing I love about my job also makes it incredibly challenging in that we're autonomous. And so we'll get on a plane and we'll go with, you know, it might be the new rotation of doctors who are coming in and it's their, you know, first week, and they're completely reliant on us as the ones
who are the service
and all the equipment. And so, you know, you can't turn up to someone who's got a sick child and go, oh, look, sorry, I haven't had much sleep tonight. It's been a tricky week.
No.
They don't care.
No, they don't.
You just need to turn up and have your game on. And so for me, my priority was simply trying to make sure I'm staying clinically, clinically on the ball.
Yes.
Able to be across that, and then extra projects and stuff just got shelved.
Yes.
And
that's okay.
And now, though, and at that time too, like I didn't have my diagnosis either, so, you know, didn't have the benefit of
understanding yourself.
And so, you know, the last few years has, I don't know, it's been oh, I don't know. It's been a lot.
Yeah.
But you know what? We're a really happy family.
Yeah. Yeah. We saw some of your people before and they were funny. Yeah.
And I think, you know, my daughter said to me a little while ago, she was a bit frustrated. She said, Mum, you know, our youngest one, she said, you don't parent him. He never gets into trouble.
Oh, we've heard
you
know, all that before. Yeah. My house.
And I said, actually, because now, she's right. I am not disciplining the way that I did before because I didn't understand where that behavior was coming from. And so, you know, there are times where I'll pull them up and go, actually, this is really not okay.
Yeah, of course.
But there's a lot of times where I go, you know what, I think I brought that on. Or there's a context to these big feelings. And we're just going to go, yep, this is a bit tricky right now. Yeah. And we're going to let it ride and then we'll come back to it later and have a chat. And I think for her, you know, it was a bit confusing to go, well, I would have gotten
trouble. Oh, I've heard it every day. Now,
And
they're over and all the injustices.
That's right. And in our environment, it is really tricky because we now, you know, we know for PDA kids, a low demand environment is the sort of thing that you just have to live in and accept. And so you went from having this expectation of, okay, everybody's chores to help the family. To now, you know, for a long time, no expectation at all.
Yeah.
And then you gradually increase it based on where their capacity is. And one day it might be okay. And learning, and I had to learn a new language. And that was, and it's a declarative language.
Yes.
And so the way in which we speak to one another. So it's, you know, I wonder how you'd feel about, you know, doing this or, you know, it's sort of sharing a thought but giving them permission to be able to make a decision as to when they can do it, if they can do it, and accepting whatever the answer was. Because, you know, they know as soon as you're trying to create a scenario where you're trying to get them to do something, because when that happens, that sense of someone's trying to manipulate my day, I now can't do it. So it's all about that sense of choice and freedom and, you know, the pushback from so many people saying, you allow your kids to rule your roost.
Yes.
It's like, well, actually, I need to be able to help them regulate. And when they're feeling okay and safe in themselves, they actually want to do things. And they can do things. But because they did it yesterday doesn't mean that they can do it tomorrow.
It's very different to how we were all brought up.
It's so different.
It's just that declarative language is completely different.
But then my others are able to tolerate more direct instruction, still in a kind way you know, in a complex way. But then it's a bit hard to turn around and say, well, I know you're able to and you're capable of doing X, Y, and Z, but your older brother's not expected to do anything and the younger one's still not quite there yet. It's a tricky one.
Yeah.
It's a tricky one. For me, for a long time I did a lot.
Yes, definitely.
And I think for me, and I definitely did so many, I wouldn't say wrong, but I would not do them again, parenting decisions. But I think acknowledging it with my children, especially the girls, and just saying, I know that this is like this. I know that this is like this. There's a lot to be taken from being seen, as you were saying before, when you were going through things. Like, it doesn't change it, but somebody knows that this is happening in my life.
Yeah.
I think that's really all you can do sometimes. You're right in the muck. You can't do anything about it. And as they get older and older, you can do other things with them or, you know, honour their childhood and say, you were amazing and I know it was tricky for you and go get therapy. Like, tell somebody, just tell them what it was like. But also you're so loved. Like, someone says that to me, I feel amazing.
Yeah. I think I really tried to verbalise that, particularly to my daughter who's in the middle and she would come home and, you know, she's also neurodivergent.
So
and so,
tired.
So yeah, there would be things that might go on for her. Or she'd come home and, you know, my big boy had a really tricky day and we were, I guess, on one hand lucky that we had a circuit breaker, but the circuit breaker for him was that he wanted to go and buy Pokemon cards or, you know, cards that were really interesting to him. It was that dopamine hit that just made things feel better. Or go and buy Lego because he could then knew he would have something to do. It would occupy him. It was also very logical. He could follow the instructions. There was was no risk that he could get it wrong. Mm. That sense of, you know, performance anxiety would go. It all was very logical, but really expensive.
Yes.
And there'd be times where we'd be like, you know, let's work through this. Let's try and do other things. And, you know, for me, that challenge of going, I know that breathing techniques can work really effectively for people with a low heart rate and helping you to feel a little bit better and stop that, you know, tight feeling in your tummy. But if you try and turn around and directly instruct someone who needs that sense of autonomy, they then just go, well, you've just told me what I have to do, now I can't do it, or I'm just not emotionally immature enough, I'm ready to take that on yet. Mm. And I know if you go and buy me cards, I'm going to feel better straight away. So, you know, it would get really tricky. And so, you know, there was one day where his support worker was new and learning on the job and amazing, but, you know, he was struggling, hadn't probably worded things in a way that was helpful, and Josh just out of frustration threw that remote control, the TV, gone. Mm. My daughter came home. Oh,
her TV's gone too.
And now, you know, what do I do? And she wanted to go and do something to help regulate herself, but her brother was sitting in that spot and he wasn't going to move. And I was going, I know that your needs are important right now, and I can't meet them, and I'm really sorry.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to teach you as a young woman that your needs are not as important.
No, no way.
You know, that you can be told, sorry, too bad. Mm. And that really, as a parent, was a huge dilemma for me. Mm. But, you know, I think in time we've just talked about it, and the biggest thing that I think has helped us is understanding more about, again, where does this behaviour come from? Mm. And it's a disability.
Yeah.
This is not who he is. No. He is in a situation he is not coping.
That's
and
right.
This is what happens. Yeah. And so, you know, it's being able to separate the behavior from the individual so that at the end of the day, when it all calms down, you can look back and go, I love you.
Yes.
Tomorrow is a new day and we're going to get through. And so that's how we've just dealt with it. And I just, you know, validate it, and I talk to her about it and I say, you are important, and it's not okay for people to treat you like your needs aren't important. Mm. But in the context, sometimes this is why we've made these decisions.
Yeah.
I just don't know what else we can do, but I think they're doing okay.
Yeah.
And they care for each other, and in times where it's not really possible, they communicate and they play together and they have a relationship, and for that I'm hugely grateful. And on saying that, I know in other families it is really, really, really challenging.
Mm.
For those kids whose outward expression is quite physical, and that's not generally my son works. You know, I don't really have words for how hard your experience is.
No, so, we know that, and we see it, and it's not something that we can really talk about, but it is really
it's a lot.
So, how is your son doing now?
So, I think, you know, in many ways we've made lots of progress, and there are days where he really has a great time, and we've got some really lovely support workers on board.
Awesome.
And one of the things we just had to do was step back a lot from school. That was a big for him.
Yep.
And unfortunately still is. And so we've just accepted that learning is lifelong.
Yeah.
Yep.
And because you're not at the same place as your peers. And I think for him that took an enormous amount of adjusting, because he was in school full time until he was, you know, in year seven, almost year, actually.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that feeling in himself of, well, my others, you know, my friends are all doing these things, but I can't, really was hard for him.
Yeah.
And we've been able to find an environment where he can do online learning with a teacher who connects with him.
Awesome.
But it's really understanding that he can only do what he can do. And if this week it's nothing, it's nothing. And next week, and it's all focused around what his interests are. And, you know, it is what it is. I think I just went, you know what, I can try and conform to what we are told our kids should have as far as an education, or we can see the person in front of us and know that them getting through their teenage years with a sense identity intact will mean that in life, in the future, he will hopefully go, do you know what, when I'm ready, I'm going to step into this environment, and I'm going to use what supports I need to achieve the goals that I want to set for myself. Mm. So now that I've accepted that, I think it's so much better because that pressure is off. And it doesn't mean that I don't encourage and try and create all sorts of learning opportunities without highlighting them. But, you know, life skills are more important than being able to say I did this math sheet and I got this grade. So it's about lining up your expectations and allowing them to, you know, celebrate the successes in the context of where they're at. So it took a, I think my husband and I probably really grieved a lot of that, I think, you know, you sort of feel like, oh, have we given up on that idea of, you know, what we thought was going to be, you know, that journey for a long time when we had a, you know, normal family, what is a normal family, but, you know, what we thought our journey was completely different. And but being able to just sort of step back and go, it's okay. And that is life to sort of navigate some of these things. And he's got lots of really helpful people around him who are ready to step into that space as soon as he's ready to pick it up.
And quiet out the noise around you and just think, for this, for our family, this is working.
And this is normal for
us. And this is normal and it's fabulous for him and then for us.
It's just that huge societal expectation that's probably only come since we were kids, really, maybe 10 or 20 years above us. Before that, if you went to school, if you didn't go to school, I mean, I mean, like, especially after year 8 or 9.
Of course, my dad finished when he was 15.
Nobody thought anything of it. But now we know in the society that we live in that education and knowledge is power and your outcomes can be better if you have a skill after school. So we have all those stresses as a parent. But also, that's not true for everybody. And so, you know, it's, but it is, it's one of those things where, you know, people will ask me questions about Buzz and Woody and how what they're doing in their last year of school, and I'm like, how much information do I give you? You're a random stranger or you're a good friend or is this even your bloody business? But they're not. I have asked people how their child's going in year 12, right? So it's not a tricky question.
No, but it's tricky for us.
And so, I'm just
And in part, like part of it is also, you know, normalising it. Because for families, picture is very different to the standard. I just wanted people to say that it's okay. And again, I feel incredibly lucky because, you know, just circumstances led us into, you know, finding this particular online learning platform where we were connected up with a teacher who completely understood our situation, which is, you know, that's gold. And I think, you know, for my own mental health to not feel like, A, I've failed him, and B, that I'm going to have the department knocking on my door, putting pressure on to do something that is just literally going to destroy him the more I push. Education is important. I don't understand it, but it's not more than his heart.
And it doesn't begin when you're five and end when you're 18.
And that's right.
And it's also for the functioning of our entire family.
That's right.
So,
and now I'm out of school with Molly, I think, wow, her rest of her life, we can tailor it to suit her. I don't have to keep her in this box anymore. You know, and she says, I'm it's so good not going to school. I'm like, I know. but her friend, she said her friends come off her anxiety medication since leaving school. You know, there's pressures there.
There is huge pressures.
So you're doing a lovely job.
The hard thing is, the flip side is that, you know, he's home 24/7.
That's right.
For me, is someone who isn't, I was just not capable to take on that homeschooling role. That's a lot of people who end up being in a position where they just sort of feel like there's no option but to take on that role. And for some people, it just comes naturally and it feels so right. But for me, I just couldn't go there. My brain could not cope with any more than what I was trying to juggle. And so, you know, knowing that there are some other options out there is just amazing. So for me, that really helped my mental health.
I feel like I just got to get them through unscathed adolescence.
The least scathed,
you know.
Absolutely. And, you know, and that's where sort of sometimes the judgment would come in. Why are you going buying that for him? You know, just reinforces that behavior. And I'm like, no, actually, you know, when we sort of, there are times where, you know, if we aren't able to sort of turn it around, the consequence consequences of that panic attack are just, as you said, you've got to get them through.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we were able to do that. And I know for some family, they're not financially in that position. Yes. And partly me hanging on to my job was kind of kept that ability to be able to meet that need. I always thought it was a band-aid treatment, actually, until we were able to help support him learn other skills, to learn how to regulate, learn how to manage that panic. You know, that was the circuit breaker that we needed. And it didn't always, you know, it wouldn't always work.
No.
You know, sometimes shops would be shut and, you know, and it was going down. But, you know, for us, I know.
We all have them.
I'm sure a lot of people.
Right. This is the road less traveled, right? And this is where we are diverse mothering. We're not doing it like Susie next door.
There's no rule book.
Every day we're changing.
We're learning.
Responding. Yeah.
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 So
absolutely.
You're a true P. That's what we do. You're speaking our language.
Yeah. And it is. And it's always sort of trying to think two steps ahead. How do I negotiate this? And how do I soften the blow? How do I help those coping skills? Yeah. And sometimes it works, it doesn't.
Yeah, but sometimes also, we can't.
Don't you wish on some level that someone had seen you and said, oh, you cope really well by reading a book or going for a run or whatever your thing is, you know? Or, Kate, I've noticed that you really like eating cake. I don't know. You know, but nobody ever said those things to us as children, right? No. So I'm at 50 trying to work out what's my comfort? Yeah. What soothes me?
Yeah.
Because we all need soothing.
Yeah.
And so I know it's like that on steroids for our children. It's still a gift that they can know as they're growing up, oh, when I feel dysregulated, I do X.
Yeah.
And sometimes I can't manage it.
Yeah.
And sometimes
I had have learned that.
Yeah, I think they're amazing skills to learn.
Yes.
That emotional literacy that we're trying to impart. And the creative ways that we are around. I remember one night my boy came out and he was really struggling and he said, do you think maybe you could drive me around? I feel like I need to go for a drive. And this was very unusual. Mm. Normally he didn't really like car rides. He'd sit on his phone and like being out in the car. But I just listened to a podcast not that long before with Ash Barty's motivational coach.
Yeah.
And talked about the sort of ways in which he would help her with her mindset about sport and various like life. And we all know, I don't know if you've followed Ash at all, but she's a pretty extraordinary sportswoman in the way that she approaches, you know, life in general. And there were things in there that he talked about that were such nuggets of gold as far as how we can deal with things that are tricky. And so I thought, okay, here's my opportunity. And I was on the couch, lying down, absolutely exhausted. And it was 11 o'clock at night. Yes. And I thought, no, I'm doing this. So I got up and I put on that podcast. And, you know, and it's that passive learning, because it's not saying this is what you should do to feel better.
No, he's the first part about podcast.
Better.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if he was listening or not. And I drove around for a good 40 minutes, I reckon. Yeah. I'm like roundabouts and all the rest of it. And he made some comment about the dogs or something. And I thought, oh, okay, he is listening. Yeah. And so these are just, you know, just really subtle ways that we would try and just impart this wisdom and hope that it sits there and at some point it'll come, you know, pop out the surface and grow like a seed and be able to draw on. Otherwise, you just go a bit nutty.
Yeah.
Well, before we finish, I'm gone over that. Yeah. But before we finish, I just wanted to say that I want to acknowledge, Mandy and I both want to acknowledge that you're probably very tired. And I think that that's one of the trickiest things. You can do anything on a full night's sleep. And I don't know when the last time I got one was. And so I think that that's what I also would like to say to P parents as Mandy and I are ending most of this podcast is you're really tired.
Yeah.
And you're more tired than other people and that's okay. And you're not going to be untired. Tricky isn't bad. But I just want to acknowledge that you're tired because sometimes it's nice to be seen.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. It is. I don't know. It's amazing what you can do.
Oh, amazing.
You just, you know.
But it does come and get you.
It does come and get you.
It does. And I do see, you know, and hear lots of stories of just that, those health battles that a lot of females feel.
It's very real.
Their body pushing beyond what they should ever do, but they just feel like they don't have a choice.
I know. That's right. If you get to have a nap, take one.
Rest. I'm just trying to rest where I can.
Yes.
Yeah, because it's okay to be burned out from other parts of my life, but I can't be burned out with my girls.
Yeah.
So, right, I have to
try and rest.
I have to rest where I can, and it's been working.
Which reminds me of my favourite cartoon ever, which is like rest when the baby rests, do the dishes when the baby does the dishes, go shopping when the baby shops.
Lie on the couch when the teenager lies on the couch.
Go on TikTok when the teenager lies down.
Don't you worry. They're like,
have we missed anything?
I don't do as much lying down these days because I think things have turned a bit for our family and in the last 12 months, as you said, you saw a pretty cool backyard. And there's something now for me, now that I've gone through that season of learning and making those accommodations and adjustments and getting all of those supports in place, and they're starting to work. And I think the thing that's so fulfilling for me is where, you know, in one situation it feels like we've done so much and maybe not made that much progress. Mm. For another one, you know, for my middle girl, you know, when things were really tricky during COVID, the sorts of supports that we put in place and those amazing professionals that have been able to step in and build those relationships and equip. She transitioned to high school this year. She didn't know a single person. Oh, it was a brand new school. She's catching the train. She's doing all of these things. And change is really hard.
Very hard.
And she's super, you know, nervous about it. And we spent 12 months sort of starting to prepare for this. And she has absolutely smashed it out. Yay. So happy. I'm just so happy for us.
Proud of her.
You know, keep going, parents, carers, because I know it feels like sometimes you're on the treadmill and you're just doing it because you do it because you have to do it. Yeah. But, you know.
There's so many nuggets of gold in there.
So many. Thank you, Trish. Thank you so much for giving your time.
Yep.
Telling us about your incredible story.
Your job, your family.
I know.
Your backyard.
P times three. The whippersnippers.
Everything.
Thank you so much. I know P's are going to love listening to this episode.
Yeah, thanks for sharing your life with us.
Thank you so much for your time. And thank you both for all that you've done for the P community. I know everybody feels the same. We have a lot of love for you guys and we really wish you the best. Aww. And, I think a lot of good things are happening in that P community. You know, I'm one of many people who listen to you and think a lot about how we approach our work professionally because of the information that's been shared amongst this podcast.
Yeah, we've had amazing guests.
Lots of love out there. All of our P families.
Thank you.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.